Preparation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm here on my own this week because Katie is on holiday, which is awesome. And you'll probably know by now why she isn't running at the moment, and I'm glad she's able to enjoy her holiday without having unbelievably awful morning sickness. So today I've got some questions that I got from people in the community group and on the Facebook page, and I thought I would just answer what people's questions are. So the first one that I've got is about a race day bag, and we've got Gold Coast coming up, so that's a bit of a hot topic at the minute because you become incredibly convinced that you're going to miss something. And I know even when I'm packing, if I'm going to be staying overnight somewhere, I'm always convinced that I'm missing something, and then I have to remind myself that I'm actually not going to Antarctica and there are going to be shops where I'm going. But the main thing for me is I tend not to do a bag check in terms of leaving a bag and then picking it up, just because I usually travel for runs, so I'm usually not that far away and I can just go back to the hotel and get what I need. But sometimes people do like to put, you know, a jumper in there or some compression pants for after their run to help with recovery, or they might also put some food in there. But in terms of what I'm actually taking on the day, I would have my fuel. I would probably make sure that I had spare safety pins for the bib. I tend to stuff things in my pockets, but other people would use like a spy belt or a flip belt or something like that for all of their stuff. I would bring cash for coffee, probably not coins because then it'll just jingle around in my pocket for 42 kilometres, get a bit annoying. I would probably also bring like a little stick of lip balm for chafing on the go, and before I'm out there I've already body glided everything, and sunscreened. And other than that, I've got my phones, actually just one phone. I have one phone and headphones I have. And sometimes I will use the headphones to listen to music or podcasts, and sometimes not. It just depends how I'm feeling on the day. And so that's the main thing that I have on there. I would usually bring like a throwaway jumper, like I'll just get a cheap jumper to wear at the start line and then I'll take it off and get rid of it once I'm warmed up. And then it saves me from actually having to sort of like part with a jumper that I actually like, or tying it around my waist or anything like that that's going to be irritating. The only other prep I would say is make sure you know where the water stations are so you can take fuel as you're coming into the water stations and wash it down with a bit of water. Familiarise yourself with where the portaloos are just in case you need to stop. And probably the only other thing is if you can... There are times, obviously, when you need a hydration pack if you're on a trail run or you're on a road run, that is where the water stations are far apart. But for most road runs, the water stations are very close together. There's no need to carry an extra 2 kilos on your back. So that is probably most what I would say about race day. And don't forget to have fun. That's why you're there. It's your victory lap. So the next question I have is some tips on how you push through at the start of your journey when everyone hurt like hell because of being overweight. Man, I could spend a long time talking about this. I think that the struggle in the beginning, when I was probably, I don't know, like 30, 40 kilos overweight when I started, and I think the part of the problem is that at a time when you most want to be completely invisible, you are so visible. And I distinctly remember either on the treadmill or on the road when I was running, like never making eye contact with anyone. Like if I'm on the treadmill, I'd be like a horse with blinders on. I would never look to the side. And if I was out on the road, it'd be almost like I'd hold my breath until the other person had passed, which is not a good idea. And if I was thinking about stopping to walk, I'd wait until the other person passed so that the amount of time that I was exposed to another person seeing me was minimized. But I think the most important part of that is to firstly realize that it's not something that anybody else thinks negatively about you at all. I certainly felt that way when I was out there, that they would see me and they'd be judging me in some way, or, you know, think I was stupid or an idiot or whatever was going on in my head at the time. But that's all it was. It was just my head. It wasn't anybody else's. Because now, as somebody who is not an overweight runner, I see people at the beginning and I see that look in their eyes that I had, and all I think is how fantastic they are. And I would like to go up and tell them that, but then I think that would be a bit, you know, stalker creepy, so I don't. But I think it, and I'm working on my telepathic powers to communicate it. And so I think the first step is to realize is that as much as you feel exposed and insecure, nobody else is thinking anything negative about you at all. I did find in the beginning, like, having sunglasses is kind of like a bit of an armor or barrier, sort of helped me to kind of block out and put my blinders on and go. But I think that the other thing that is so important is to know is that you, as an overweight person, you can do anything. You know, I ran a half marathon as an overweight person. There is absolutely nothing that you can't do, and never let a fear of how somebody else might see you stop you from doing what you want to do. And I think what sort of helped me to sort of tip over the edge of it was realizing that how amazing my body was for being able to do the things that other people were doing with carrying all the extra weight that it was. So not only was I able to run for 30 minutes, but I was able to carry 30 or 40 extra kilos with me as I went, which when I started to appreciate that and look at all of the things that my body was achieving rather than what it looked like, that's when things fell into place. But physically, there is a big demand on your body when you are at that stage. And I think one of the things that really helped me was being mindful of my nutrition after a run with that. So I think I started having like orange juice with some magnesium powder in it, and it just helped to replenish what I would lose on a run, and then I'd be a lot less likely to spend the rest of the day lying down. So that would probably be the main thing that I would say about in the beginning when it's really, really hard, is acknowledging that it is really hard, but that you are doing it anyway. And in some ways, I think of that, like, there have been other periods when I have run before I started running more seriously over the last 5 years. And when I think about when I started running after Piper was born, I think of that as so much more impressive than other times when I have been sort of at a normalish weight and I'd go out for a run. Like, that wasn't that... You know, it just was something that I did, and it was always in the context of losing weight, so I never stuck with it. But when I started to run more recently, I was able to kind of move it out of the context of losing weight, and it was just all about what my body could do. And I was able to appreciate my body so much more because it was still able to do all of the things that I had done before, even though at the time I was still also carrying around an extra 30 or 40 kilos. The next question we have is mindset of coming back from injury and dealing with boring rehab. And yes, rehab is boring, and there are no two ways about that. People can be quite happy, and I can certainly be quite happy spending hours during the week going for a run or doing other things, but there's this real sort of resistance to rehab. But I think that the important part of it is to be just as committed to it as training. I treat rehab as training. There is no difference at all between the two. Probably one of the big things I miss is routine. And so I make the rehab my routine, and that's my training for the week, and that's what I'm doing. And if I say I want to get back to running, then I have to show that in rehab, because if I want to get back to running but I'm not willing to do a few boring exercises, well, what does that say? That says that it's not that important to me. And so in order for me to commit fully to the running, I have to commit fully to the rehab. And to keep it, to keep myself motivated, I probably often, you know, document what I'm doing, just like I would with training, to, you know, keep everything ticking along. But I think that the mindset of doing rehab has to be the same as your mindset for training. And if there is resistance there, whatever resistance you overcome in terms of your rehab is going to translate into a superior mindset for training when that happens. And anytime you have, you're having that thing of, oh, I should do my physio exercises, but I don't really feel like it, you think about, okay, in 2 weeks when I'm not quite back to running, am I going to be wishing that I did my physio exercises? And probably the practical thing I would say is, even if, say, the physio had said, do this, you know, 3 times a week, I would actually tend to do it every day. Because if it's every day, or even twice a day, morning and night, because if it's every day, that's not a conversation I have to have with myself. I don't have to go, oh, am I doing my exercises today? It's just, it's a given, like showering. So if you are having trouble getting through everything in the week, then just make it every day. And then the follow-up question that somebody had to that is that they have noticed, as I'm someone who avoids injury on the whole, and what is my anti-injury source? So I've probably only had, I would say, 2 major injuries that required rehab. And I really just think that it's a matter of having an ongoing conversation with your body. Training is an intuitive process. You know, you kind of tend to think of it as not intuitive at all, and you just apply training stimulus and then fitness happens. But there is a place within your training that your body wants to be. So sometimes for me, that might, I can be quite happy running 5 or 6 times a week, and sometimes it's only 3 or 4. But it's, for me, it's about listening to the body but not listening to the mind, because the mind doesn't want to do anything. It's a bit like that joke they had in, somebody was saying that their advice for marathon pacing was that you should let your body decide where it was comfortable at. And somebody said, if I went where I was comfortable at, I'd be walking, which is more of a mind decision than a body decision. I think a body can be quite comfortable at a running pace. But I think that the most important thing in terms of injury prevention, other than, you know, your basic things like warming up and rolling and doing all of that sort of stuff, is developing an understanding of where your body is at, what it's capable, what is discomfort and what is pain. Because there should never be any pain, but, you know, discomfort is normal. So figuring out where the line is, and I tend to have a rule of, if I have something and it's a bit niggly and on balance it's sort of improving without treatment, then that's fine. But if it's staying the same or it's not improving, then that's the time that I go to the physio. Next question comes from Carla. How do I get out the door when your run buddy cancels or podcast mate travels? So I think we can ignore the second part of the question, although the answer is that I send her lots of text messages. But run buddy cancels, because a lot of times a great way to get yourself motivated to get out the door is if you know you're meeting someone, because if you're meeting someone, you're not going to let them down. and you're going to go. So when they cancel, that can be a really easy point in time for you to say, well, I could just stay in bed then, and you could. And it's a time of year where it's cold and bed is very tempting and all the rest of it. But you should treat yourself like your friend. So there is no reason why you should be cancelling on yourself. Run as a date with yourself, and why would you cancel on yourself? And so I would just say that you always commit to the run the night before. Nothing that happens the morning of should change that, barring, you know, sickness or, you know, or kids are sick or something like that. But if you are capable and ready to go for a run, then you never make that decision in the morning, ever, because then you get up and it's 3 degrees and you're like, oh, it's so cold. It's fine. It's only cold if you're not moving. And the next question is, I'm someone that likes to think I can handle most things. So when the wheels start to come off, I just bury my head and go into denial. Any tips for the stubborn, headstrong denialists on facing vulnerability and asking for help? Okay, so I think it's really easy to get into a situation where if you don't talk about it, it's almost like it's not happening. So if you, it could be something that's sort of injury related, like you are having a persistent niggle and it's just, you know, you're stretching and you're rolling, but it's just not going away. And you are employing a head in the sand approach to that. Or it could be that you are noticing a pattern of habit or mindset that you just can't seem to break out of on your own. So that could be something like, I do really well for, you know, for 3 weeks, and then as soon as I miss a run, the whole thing falls apart and I'm not sure what to do about that. Or it could be something to do with, sometimes you notice that you resist a particular type of training. So either it might be strength training at home, or it might be higher intensity running, or it might be, it could even be, say, like a long run, like you do it, but you don't do it at an easy pace. You do it at your sort of steady state run or whatever it is. So there's all sorts of things that can happen that you might need help for. So the first thing I would say in terms of injury, as I talked about just before, I have rules for that. So if it is getting better, then I can go, okay, as long as it's continuing to get better, then I don't need to go and see someone to get it looked at. But if it's staying the same, and after, you know, a couple of days of rest, and it's either staying the same or it's not getting better, then that's the time when I need to see someone. Because you have to keep in the front of your mind that if it's not getting better on its own, then the longer you delay treatment, then the longer you're potentially going to be saddled with the injury. And I think the other thing is just being able to, with the other things that are to do with mindset or a particular type of training or whatever it is, I think that there are some good things that you can do in terms of figuring out. I like to look at, okay, what are the things, the obstacles that get in my way, and how am I going to overcome those obstacles or mitigate the obstacles? So say, for example, for ages I've had this thing of I just hate tempo runs, would resist them, avoid them. I would have really boring arguments with myself about not wanting to do them. And then I just read this thing and on other workouts with the same sort of effect as a tempo run, but they had all of these little breaks in them. And these are the sort of like, you know, sort of fartlek type runs or tempo type intervals, but they have sort of rest periods. And so I just did that for a while. Because if you're going to resist doing something, it's pointless because you're going to find a way to not do it. Or you're just going to hate it and then you're going to start resenting what you're doing and it's just no good. So I think that there can also be, sometimes you can see patterns in habits. Like I like to look at things as there are reasons and there are excuses. A reason is I have the flu. A reason is my kids are sick. A reason is I've had this really full-on deadline at work or at uni. An excuse is something different to that. An excuse is a way for you to avoid something that you perceive as hard or challenging. And sometimes it's just looking at the thing that is hard or challenging is going to have a much bigger impact than just on running or something like that. So it could be maybe hill sprints. We'll use hill sprints because I love hill sprints. Let's say you resist hill sprints because they're too hard and maybe they make you feel, you know, uncoordinated or a bit like, or maybe they make you feel a bit silly because people see you running up and down the street or whatever it is. But if you are able to push through that and prove to yourself that you can do the hard thing, then that's going to sort of really challenge your mindset on how you view yourself and how you look at your running and what you think you're capable of. So I would also say, in terms of asking for help, sometimes you don't even have to say it that loud or even to necessarily your running coach. You could just say to a close friend, this is what is happening. And almost as soon as you say it, I mean, you could even write it down and not say it to anyone, but as soon as it's out there, it makes it nearly impossible for you to not then take that next step. It's holding it in your brain and not letting it out that is stopping you from taking that next step. And I think it's a lot like this thing that people have, you know, you see a lot of these these challenges about not complaining. And it's not about not complaining, but what happens when you complain is you kind of get to vent, but it stops you from, because you vented, you then don't need to resolve the situation at all. And then it just keeps going. Whereas if you are in a discipline of not complaining, then instead of complaining, you've actually got to look at it and go, okay, how do I resolve this situation? And by not letting off steam in that way, you are actually put in a proactive position of having to do something to change what you want changed. So I think that as soon as you put whatever it is out there, even if you are not at the point of being able to talk to someone, even if you just journal it and write it down, the very fact that you've written it down will then allow you to take that next step to asking for help. So the next question is something that I think that we've talked a little bit about. It's coming back from injury and staying motivated. But it's more, I guess, about the coming back rather than the actual boring rehab part. I have calf strains and they've knocked me around. Dear calves are pesky muscles. What services? All right. So I've had tight calves in the past and I've used a combination of physio and massage to deal with it. I think probably my preference would be in terms of a chiropractor would probably be more, I'd be more likely to go to an osteopath, but that's a personal choice. And certainly I've gone to the physio before and they've done acupuncture at the physio and I found that to be really great as well. So I think it's just a matter of exploring things. And I think it's hard when you're coming back from injury because it feels like starting over, but it's not starting over. You're starting with so much more than what you started with when you originally, you know, started running. It's you're at a completely different place. You have the knowledge that you are capable of doing it, which usually when you start, you don't have knowledge at all. It's very unclear if you're capable of it usually when you start. And you have a whole lot of muscle memory in your favor. And you also kind of, in some ways, I find it a kind of liberating thing. In the times when I've come back from injury, I've kind of done interesting things. Like the first time I did I transitioned to barefoot running, which is great for my form. I didn't end up sticking with it, but I did do it for about a year. And then after the next injury, I focused on short training, like 3 to 5K training, which I really enjoyed. So I actually find coming back from injury is it's kind of like you can just kind of get into a habit or, you know, your sort of status quo with training. And sometimes coming back from injury, you can actually kind of go, actually, what do I really want to do? And you get that time to kind of look at it, and then you get to come back doing everything the right way. So you get to come back and you get to do your rolling and your stretches and your proper warm-ups and your complementary strength activities. I would also say for calf particular things, I get a lot of benefit out of heavy weighted calf raises, so I'd give that a bill too. And there are some great calf rolling things, but also there's just nothing better than doing a proper warm-up. And I know that when I ask people, like for an easy run, I wouldn't necessarily need to do a warm-up for that, but for tempo runs and fartleks and hill sprints and intervals, I would. And I know it's a bit like the kind of the rehab thing. I know it's boring and it takes time, you know. Probably my warm-up probably takes a good 20 minutes. And so you kind of lose the benefit of the session being shorter because I spend so much time warming up. So I kind of do like a 10-minute easy jog, and then I do 8 strides, which is sort of each about 80 meters, and I walk the recovery of 80 meters after each one, and it's kind of like building up the acceleration in each one until that by the 8th one I'm at kind of like 100% sprint. And then also do some sort of stretching after that. But by doing that, my body is really primed then to do the faster sessions, and it's not so much of a shock to the system. And I found it a really great way of managing things like strains and niggles and stuff like that. So the next question is also something that we've vaguely touched on, but I'll talk about again. Something about stigmas of a body type for runners. I'm feeling really low about myself, so this might be a selfish request or no such thing. And maybe tied into the original question about hurting when you start out with being overweight. I think one of the great things about when I went to the first half marathon that I did was seeing that there is no runner's body type. There were people who were... There were skinny people, there were slim people, there were athletic people, there were muscular people, there were stocky people, there were overweight people. And it blew my mind how we still have this idea of what a runner looks like, because no one looks like that. Or maybe like one or two people do, but there is just a huge range of what people look like, and it in no way impacts on your ability. And I think that it was a revelation to me at various points when I realized that I might have been more overweight than other people, but I could actually run faster or run longer than them. And then I realized that this sort of like weird idea I had in my head that, you know, this size meant this level of efficiency, when it doesn't really always pan out that way. It is, I think, really important in the beginning. Yes, it's hard, and you probably feel cumbersome and all of those negative feelings that come along with it. But really, really try and focus on what you are achieving, rather than like all of the. For me, anyway, I guess what happened is I focused on the running. And then in order to continue to focus on the running, I had to focus on the diet to support the running. And then all of the weight stuff just basically took care of itself, more or less. And I would say if it is something that you're interested in working on, then definitely, you know, looking at your time for training and taking like a third of that time and devoting it to meal prep is going to make a huge difference, because I think for me, the time when my nutrition falls apart most is when I don't have anything prepared, and then I will literally eat whatever I can get my hands on the most quickly. But usually people are like, I had been, when I started running, I'd been overweight and I'd been pregnant, but I'd probably been overweight for, I would say, at least 3 or 4 years at that point. And that's a long time. And so you need to give your body, you know, a chance to take things slowly, not expect huge amounts, really appreciate that your body is doing amazing things, and really focus on what your wins for the week are, and take it out of this kind of arbitrary land of how much you weigh, which is hard because there's how much you weigh, there's also how comfortable you are feeling. And a lot of people who are overweight, like myself, at the time, I definitely didn't feel overly comfortable in my skin. But the more I focused on what I could achieve with the body, the more comfortable I felt in my skin. So I think that is probably my big piece of advice on that, is the more you are able to just really focus on what you can do, what you can achieve, and develop goals in line with that, then the more the body stuff will just look after itself, both how you see yourself and actual weight loss as well. Somebody has asked something to do with how to maintain stamina endurance, how to leave some in the tank for the last kilometre for short runs and 3-4 half marathons. I always feel I fall short at the finish line. Oh man, me too. That's how it always felt when I started, is there's a certain fade that would happen. And I think that part of it is just time, but there are other things that you can do as well. So part of stamina and endurance is probably getting comfortable with going further than what is the goal distance. So say, for example, if you know, it's a half marathon and you're struggling with the last 3 kilometers, then if you get comfortable doing, you know, more like 24 kilometer runs in training, then on the day the 21 kilometers will feel that much easier. So that's part of it. The other part is you usually fade towards the end because you are running out of fuel. So it's possible that you need to look at your fueling strategy a little bit more with the long runs. And other part of it, I mean, it could be pacing, and it could just be going out a little bit too fast in the beginning. But It is one of those things that even if you are pacing based on effort, as you get further along into the run, it gets harder. So you would tend to, you know, get slower at the same effort. But I think that I was definitely one of those people who started out strong and then really it fell apart in the back end. So I did a few things. And that was one of the first things I did was on long runs, I would do like the last 2 to 3 kilometers at a tempo or a fast pace to just teach myself to sprint at the end, and basically treat it as a skill that I needed to learn, that when I got to the end, there had to be more. So that is definitely, having a fast finish on some of your easy runs can definitely sort of get you into that. You can also do other things, like on your long run, doing some intervals in the middle. It sounds fun, doesn't it? So I think that those are some of the things that you can put in place, and then you can kind of get a feel for, is this a fueling thing? Is this just, you know, training your body to be able to push a little bit at the end? Or is it more just getting more comfortable at the at the distance you're going to be at. Sometimes when you get towards the end, it just feels hard because you know it's the end. You know, so if you get to, so also probably what I used to do sometimes is I'd go, I'm going to run 6 kilometres, and then a kilometre before the end, go, actually, I'm going to run 8. And it sort of trains you out of that thing of kind of like having a really set notion of where the end is, and like, and just sort of like keeps challenging you a little bit in that way. And then another question is treadmill running during wet winter days and also winter. And they notice that I don't live in an actual part of the world that has real winter, which even though, like, yes, this morning it was 3 degrees, but compared to Melbourne, no, there's no real winter up here. So the treadmill is an interesting thing because it's so different to running outside. You know, in some ways it's great because you don't have to think about the pace, because, you know, to stay on the treadmill you've got to keep running. But it can be really hard to keep your mind occupied on the treadmill, as opposed when you're outside, you're seeing other things, you're kind of like going over set things, set sort of past set landmarks and things like that, and it does make it a little bit easier. So I think the main thing that I would say with managing treadmill time is I would have a few sort of tricks, I guess, that I would do. One is I think about, like, say if I'm doing 8 kilometres on the treadmill and I have like an 8 kilometre route that I would do outside, when I'm on the treadmill, I think about where I am as if I was outside, and somehow that makes it easier for me to mentally manage the distance. And I guess the other thing that I would do is, it's probably sort of, it depends on the display of the treadmill, but I'd kind of like go for, you know, like maybe 200 metres, just looking at the distance, and then I'd look for the time a little bit and look at the distance, which sounds ridiculous, but somehow like switching between what I was paying attention on made it that little bit easier to just keep going. And I think also you can just use the time to, I might use the time to sort of think about what I'm going to be doing the next day, or, you know, I might sort of write a blog post in my head or do something like that to sort of keep my mind occupied. Treadmill running is really great for if you're going to have one day out of the week when you're going to be running on the treadmill. I do intervals on the treadmill. It's quicker. It's, you know, it's sort of, in some ways it makes the interval part easier because you have to keep up with the treadmill. And even though it can kind of, you know, faster running tends to be higher impact, but if you are on the treadmill, it's lower impact. So it might be something to try on the treadmill, whereas I would probably avoid doing long runs on the treadmill if you possibly can. I think the most I've ever run on a treadmill is about 12 kilometres, and I think that was about enough. I mean, in terms of winter running, for the most part, you know, if you've got long tights, or, you know, if you are in particular parts of the world, thermals and, you know, long sleeves, once you're out the door, you're fine. It's tough when you get, it's sort of when it's a combination of like rain and wind, and, you know, if the wind really picks up, then it can be like the rain are like arrows into your skin, which can be less than pleasant. But generally, there's never been any weather that I've not gone outside for. You know, it's rain, you know, skin's waterproof. I'm not going to be out there forever. And also, if it's really wet, then at a certain point you're saturated and it's not going to get any worse. So I think, but that said, I'm not in a place where I'm dealing with, most of the time anyway, gale force wind and like sleet. So I think it's probably, if you are in those sorts of areas, it's probably more a matter of picking your battles. So, you know, like maybe looking at the weather and going, okay, you know, like, this is going to be a really awful day, so that's a good day for me to maybe do my shorter run on the treadmill. This day is going to be okay, so maybe I'll be able to get out on that day for my long run, and just being a bit flexible with your training around the weather, and just not thinking about it too much. Usually once you're out there, it's fine. And I do have sort of, I think having good winter gear does help. I have a sort of a raincoat thing that I can wear, and it also would fit in my pocket in a pinch. And so that's quite a good thing to take with me. So it just keeps me mostly dry when it does get pretty torrential. And I think that how I get through that kind of those kind of conditions in winter is just, I think of it as an adventure, and most of the time I'm happy to be outside. Sometimes it gets a bit miserable and sometimes I wouldn't mind having a treadmill in the garage, but I think that it's just a matter of not missing out on opportunities because you think that it's too cold or it's too miserable. You know, even if all you do is, even if you had planned like 40 minutes and you end up doing 20 minutes because the weather is just really, really awful, or you do it on the treadmill, just make a plan for your week, stick to that plan. And, you know, yeah, sometimes you will have to change things at the last minute if the weather is absolutely hideous. And that's fine too, because usually it's, you know, it's only a few months out of the year, and, you know, like, I tend to get pretty good weather conditions here during winter, but then I have to tolerate the humidity of summer for a few months. And on that's why I like winter running, because if I had a choice between humidity and freezing cold, I'll take the freezing cold any day of the week. But, you know, my freezing is just not like Ballarat freezing. So I think it's just a matter of getting into the mindset of not thinking about it, and, you know, run more, think less. And the final question I have is, what do you do once the first half is done? Another half, a full, it seems like such a waste to let all that awesome fitness go. All right, so when you train for an event, you train for your fitness to peak at a certain point of time. Now, you can keep that peak fitness for a period of time, but not forever. So it also depends on the distance. So, like, if you train to race and peak for like a marathon distance, you wouldn't be really looking at racing another marathon in the near future, because it takes too much out of you. Whereas if you are dealing with shorter distances, like 5K or 10K or even a half, that's more doable because your body has less recovery time. But in any given training, there's going to be training to peak, and then there's going to be recovery time. And at a certain point, you're also going to need to sort of rebuild the base. You just can't stay there forever. So usually people find, like, summer is often a good time to go back to base training, because who wants to be, you know, doing high intensity runs in summer? You know, it's a lot easier to just do kind of a lot more comfortable running at that time, because the heat already takes quite a lot out of your body anyway. And then, and it also kind of coincides with, if you look at the Australian running calendar, you know, most of the runs would probably be in between sort of like March and October. So that period in between sort of November to February is kind of a natural base building phase. I do think it's a really good idea to have an idea of what's next after a first half, because it is so, so natural to get into a bit of a slump after a first event like that, because you're kind of building up to something for so long, and then it happens and it's awesome, but then it's kind of like, what do you do next? So I think it doesn't necessarily have to be another half or a full, but just have, you know, something planned, because what can happen if you don't have anything planned is you've kind of achieved this big goal, you take your foot off the accelerator, and then all of a sudden it's been, you know, 3 or 4 months and you haven't been for a run. I would say whether you do another half or a full, that's a personal decision to make about what you like to do. A full marathon is not the logical next step after a half marathon. I know a lot of people like the marathon because the marathon is like a steady state kind of run. So it takes a lot longer. It doesn't take that kind of that real intensity that 5K does. And, you know, the half marathon is probably more of a threshold type run. So, you know, it really is more about kind of working out what you actually enjoy to do. And, you know, for a lot of people, yep, a marathon might be on their bucket list to do at least once. And so that can be a great thing to build up to. Or you might want to do another half. I think the best thing to do is you look at, you know, any kind of basic sort of training plan for any distance, and just get a sense of what you like in there. Like, if you don't like going for, you know, like a 3-hour run on the weekend and an hour and a half run during the week, you're not going to enjoy marathon training very much. And similarly with the other distances, they all have the different types of workouts that they focus on, and it can be almost easier sometimes to go, well, this is the kind of training that I really like, and so then I am just going to find an event that fits in with how I want my life to look, and that's going to be really enjoyable, and it's going to celebrate that training. And now I've managed to gas bag for about 50 minutes. And so I think that we will call that a day for today. If you have any questions, you can pop into the community group, which is at facebook.com/group/opmove, or you can email me at zoe@operationmove.com.au, and I will pop those links in the notes as well. At the moment, we are putting together a training group, which it's 12 weeks of training, and you can pick from 3 days, 4 days, or 5 days. And there are two, in addition to the run sessions, there are two optional strength sessions that you get every week. And that's going to kick off on the 25th of July. So it coincides with the Melbourne Running Festival. And this week we have early bird rates, which finish up on Sunday. So if that interests you, you can go and check it out at operationmove.com.au/training. So if that kind of thing interests you, then jump on board, because I think it'll be a really fun group. And because I'll be down in Melbourne, hopefully we'll all get to meet for carb loading the night before, which will be fun. And I will see you next week, hopefully with Katie. I will have kids on holidays, so we'll see how that pans out, but I look forward to returning to normal programming, and I will see you then. Bye.